to St. Margaret's. It's great to see you, and thank you very much for coming, and thank you, Will and the band, for leading us in worship. That was great. We shall be back to you very soon, which is very reassuring. In a moment, Ollie's going to come and speak to us, and to the fact that we're going back to them very soon, and that's reassuring. There's no reflection on you, I hasten to add. It's very reassuring, your preaching. We're looking forward to that. A week on Monday, though, we're having one of those lightning seminars between 1:05 and 1:35, a week on Monday, the 26th, when Will is going to be speaking on hearing God through the gifts of the Spirit. And through silence. We had a great time about 4 weeks ago, Sophie teaching us on hearing God through the Bible. She'll be doing that again in the spring in St. Mary Woolnoth one Monday. But a week on Monday here, and I'll email everyone out to remind them so you needn't have to remember. Week on Monday, 1:05 to 1:35 in the church room in there, hearing God through the gifts of the Spirit, basically. And now, Ollie, it's so marvellous to have you. Ollie, as you probably all know, is one of our parochial church council, one of our elders, a man of God. Yes, Arthur.
Build me up there. Great. If we can turn in our Bibles to John 10, we're looking at verses 7 to 10, and it's on page 1016. Okay, it says, "Therefore Jesus said again, 'Very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters me through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full.'" A chap called Sir George Adam Smith, he was a scholar and theologian in the 19th and 20th century, spent some time in Syria and Egypt. And he tells of a meeting a shepherd there who showed him the fold where the sheep were led at night. It consisted of four walls with a way in. Now, Smith asked, "That is where you go at night?" "Yes," the shepherd said. "And when the sheep are in there, they are perfectly safe." "But there is no door," said Smith. "I am the door," the shepherd replied. He was not a Christian man, but rather an Arab shepherd. But he was using the same language that Jesus has used here in the passage. And he explained further, "When the light has gone and all the sheep are inside, I lie in that open space, and no sheep ever goes out but across my body, and no wolf comes in unless he crosses my body. I am the door." Now, this provides understanding of the cultural context of the parable that Jesus means by being the gate. From this, we can unpack some key truths, and in summary, and then I'll unpack them. Jesus in John 10 is saying that in order to get into the fold, you have to go through him. And that by putting your trust elsewhere will not get you into the fold. But also by putting our trust in Jesus, we will be saved, protected, and sustained. And that we will live life to the full. Is this our experience? So firstly, let's look at essentially, verse 7, Jesus is the only gate for the sheep. Now, Jesus doesn't say that he is a gate. He says he's the gate in this passage. Now, he paints a picture of him being the gate to the sheepfold, that the only way in is through or over him. Now, this is something that many struggle with in the world today, that Jesus has claimed being the only way to God, where there is safety, security, and pasture. Is through him. Jesus' I am statements state that there is no alternative. As the use of the phrase I am, the Jewish name for God, puts himself as God in human form. Now, earlier in John 10, he states that anyone climbing over the wall into the pen has not been invited and therefore is a thief and a robber. As such, will be treated harshly. He was certainly directing this as a warning, particularly against the Pharisees, who either thought that as God's chosen people they had automatic entry, or that because they followed the law and all the extra laws that they had tagged on, that this would get them into the fold. But Jesus doesn't say that. Jesus states that going to church or being part of a Christian family are not going to get you into heaven and an abundant life. To get that, you have to, like a sheep, make your own choice, to completely trust him with your life and lean not on your own understanding. The message is a simple one, but we, the world, will look to complicate it, to twist it, and in many cases try and lead people down a false path. So this false teaching, which is tied into Jesus being the only way. In Jesus' time, the Pharisees taught that in order to get into heaven, you had to fulfill the law. As I said, there were 613 laws to fulfill. Quite tricky. In medieval times, maybe a wealthy man might leave a sum of money to the church to curry favor into getting into heaven, despite how they may have lived their lives. And today we have many people saying that in order to achieve nirvana or fulfillment, that there is another way. Jesus is, as I've said earlier, is stating in this passage, there is no other way, no other religion, belief, or what we do to get to God. Jesus is God's one and only rescue plan. Any other option would suggest that, you know, God's plan is not good enough, or we know better than God. This is the main reason the world struggles with the message of Jesus, either because it's available for anyone, good and bad, and that there is nothing you can do to earn your right of entry, or because it disputes the more liberal message that there are many ways into heaven, not just through Jesus. This is why Jesus often talks about being wary of false teachers or wolves in sheep's clothing. Now, some might argue, where's the proof that Jesus is the true door then? Well, we only have to look at the life of Christ to see that he shows that God desires relationship and wants to remove all the obstacles of getting to him. The proof then is not only that he is the only way, is underlined when Jesus lays down his life for the sheep, as he prophesies, rises again and conquers death. For those of us today who believe this and then trust Jesus with our lives, further proof is then evident in our lives as we walk with Jesus, and he leads us into new pastures and sustains us and keeps us safe. Whereas false teaching very often will leave us feeling hollow and wanting fulfillment. Thirdly, through the door, Jesus, there is safety and sustenance. Now, Jesus uses obviously the analogy of sheep, the shepherd, and the fold to underline some key aspects of what it means to trust Jesus. Well, firstly, the obvious thing is Jesus provides safety to his sheep. The fold represents spiritual security in the times of darkness, a place where we know that we're protected and safe from the world, what the world might throw at us. Life, as we all know, has its ups and downs, wherever we are or whatever we're going through. Knowing that Jesus has our backs and that he'll protect us and help us as we put our trust in him is key. And many of us can attest to our own experience, whether it's health or wealth or relationships, where we've trusted Jesus and he's seen us through. Secondly, Jesus provides sustenance for his sheep. Not only does Christ protect us from the wolves, but he also leads us into new pastures. He sustains us and leads us into new chapters of our lives with a sense of direction and purpose. But we have to listen to his voice and go where he prompts us. It's interesting, the passage also highlights in verse 9 that we will come in and go out and find pasture. We're sometimes presented with choice, stay or go. Either way, we'll find pasture and Jesus will be with us. The last point is living life to the max, or having life to the max, in verse 10. The world teaches us so many things that will bring us a fulfilled life. Maybe some of the more serious things about putting our security in how much we earn or our job. I'm reminded of a Pepsi advert in 1993 that talks about living life to the max. That by drinking a fizzy drink, you will not only have your thirst fulfilled, but you'll actually look pretty cool in the process. Although reviewing the advert now on YouTube, shows that fashion is somewhat dated. The fact that I can remember this ad flippantly illustrates the fact that as Christians, we let the world in and occasionally get lost in the world's teaching, that in order to have a fulfilled life, we need to do this or have that. Jesus doesn't offer any of these things, the house, the family, the job. Rather, he says we need to die to these things and follow him so that we can have an abundant life. So trusting that God has what we really need and that he will sustain us is key. Recognizing the Good Shepherd's voice, as in verse 4, will help us know which way to turn. But in order to recognize his voice, we need to spend time with him daily, going through him into the fold and allowing him to lead us into those new pastures. So to summarize, the black American football player, Colin Kaepernick, is famous for kneeling during the national anthem with his arm and fist raised as a powerful protest to black inequality in America. Consequently, it meant that he lost his job and his career at the peak of his abilities. Nike, the sportswear company, have somewhat controversially used his statement and the image to market their goods with the phrase, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything." Today, Jesus says, "Believe in me, sacrifice everything, and enter through the gate, because there's no other way. Why? You'll gain life to the full, safety and sustenance, not only now, but for all eternity." Are we willing to hear his voice and answer his call? For some of us, we may have been led astray by the world's teaching or our own priorities. The invitation is still the same, to come back into the fold and to put our lives in the hands of God, who is willing to lay his life down for his sheep. Who do you trust?